Well, hello, everybody. Welcome to this week's edition of Racing Hotspot. My name's Devin Ponslesny. I'm joined this week in person, not on Zoom, in person, by Mr. Jordan Jenkins. Jordan, how are you?
I'm good, Devin. How about you?
I'm doing good. Getting ready for spring sports. We're gearing up for it here at the PPG. I know you're on spring break, so I hope you've had a great break so far.
I have had a good break so far.
Nice and relaxing.
Yes.
Recording this on Tuesday, March 19th. A couple days after the Bristol NASCAR weekend, as well as the 12 hours of Sebring, racing down in Florida. Jordan, I know in the past you brought the short track news to us, and I'm assuming we're just going to assume that role to you.
Yeah.
Have you cover the short track stuff. Any news, anything like that, gearing up for upcoming weekends, like any thoughts like that?
What do you mean?
Like modified, what do they got coming up? Like any local short track news you've seen, anything like that?
Not anything local, but obviously the NASCAR Wheel Modified Tour, who had that season opener on February 10th, has their second race of their season coming up on next Friday, March 29th. So they had a definition of a vacation pretty much between their season opener and their second one.
Definitely a little vacation for sure. I'll give you that. Yeah, so they ran at New Smyrna. Then they have Richmond coming up next week, which would be with the Cup weekend. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, exciting stuff there for them. Trying to pull up the IMSA results. Because they ran at Sebring this weekend. And I'll give you the top three, overall top three. I just want to point that out. We had Dwayne Taylor Racing with Andretti Autosport number 06. Oh, 40. They won. Cadillac Racing number 01 was second, and the Porsche Penske Motorsports was number 7 was third. A lot of these names. There are three drivers per car. So third place was Campbell, Cameron, and Nazar. Second place, Dixon, Zonde Bardais, and then Jordan, Herta, and Deltras? Is that how you say
Deltras.
It? Deltras. Deltras. Okay. So that's your...
We know who Colton Herta, Jordan Taylor, who's been in some Cup races and Xfinity races on the road courses, and obviously Scott Dixon, too.
Yeah.
He's an IndyCar driver as well as Herta, so...
Yeah, for sure. So the top 9 places overall were controlled by the GTP class, and then LMP2 was 10th through 19th, and then GTD Pro was 20th through 28th, and then the GTD was all the way to 40th, and then it was a mix from there. So definitely multi-class racing, but it all filed out the way you would think on the speed charts for sure. Their next race is in 30 days, the Grand Prix at Long Beach, April 19th through 20th. So that's always an exciting race when they're running at Long Beach on the streets with usually IndyCar weekend as well. Not sure if they're with IndyCar that same weekend. I can look it up real quick. Usually they are.
I think they are. I think that's where IndyCar is in about a month.
Yep.
So it's 2 days before.
Yeah.
Because April 19th and 20th, and the IndyCar race is April 21st.
Yep. So that weekend, they'll probably have their Grand Prix on the 20th, and then IndyCar will have Sunday the 21st. So definitely cool that they do that. I like when they have, you know, your supporting series, even if it's a whole new series. You know, like with NASCAR, they'll have the Xfinity series, which is great. But like when you have IndyCar, you have the Indy Lights, or Road to Indy, I think is what they're calling them now, or Indy Next, actually. And then you'll have sports cars, or you'll have the truck series for NASCAR or something. So that's kind of cool because you're mixing your two fan bases, your sports cars and your Indy cars, or your Indy cars and your truck series or whatever. Looks like the next race for Indy Next is Indianapolis on May 10th and 11th. Nope, just kidding. April 28th. Thank you.
The Grand Prix of Alabama.
Thank you for pointing that out to me, right in front of me.
I just want to point out that was the bigger of the two.
The bigger on the website.
And he chose to ignore that one.
I didn't ignore it. I just missed it. Anyways, so yeah, there's our quick touch on IMSA, IndyCar. I only watched probably 4 or 5 hours of the 12 hours of Sebring, but the biggest part of that I think we need to talk about is that accident from, what was it, GTD,
LMP2?
Nope, it was the, dang it, hold on, it was the top, the fastest series.
LMP.
GTP.
Oh, GTP.
That was it. Not GTD. GTP. Sorry. Sorry, folks. But anyways, car, leader, contact, tire barrier, rollover.
Yep.
There's your review.
The car was
your review in 10 words.
The car was laying upside down on the tire barrier as well.
Yeah. So, like, and now, driver's okay. You know, racing accident. Nothing where it was like, oh my goodness. Like, multi-class racing tends to bring this type of racing up, right? Like, you're going to have a slower car, faster car trying to get around a slower car. Maybe a slower car is a least experienced driver, whatever the case may be. And then all of a sudden, boom, you get the GTP car going into the tire barrier, hits the tire barrier, goes straight up because of the tires basically reverberate, where he bounces off the tires and he rolls over. I saw on social media, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or X, everybody's wondering, why would you put a tire barrier there? You know, you should have, like, the wall. Why is the wall there? Move the wall. Do this. Do that. And I think people need to understand that, you know, NASCAR's huge on safety. NASCAR owns IMSA. You know, every wall, every projectile is different. You know, somebody said, well, if NASCAR owns that, you should put a safer barrier there. Okay. So you put a safer barrier there. That car is now going to bounce off the safer barrier and possibly go back into traffic. You know, okay, you move the wall. Does that work with the infield road course to the road course? You know, like, every facility is different. You know, like, you saw Nashville Super Speedway. There was the Ryan Blaney accident. He hits the inside wall at the end of pit road, and people are like, there should be a safer barrier there. Well, is that wall there permanent, or is that where the entrance to the road course is at Nashville? You know, like, there are so many factors, and I think that people need to look at the positives. First of all, he's okay. The car did its job, and the tires did its job, because he hit the wall, and it was contained to that one area. He didn't go over it and hit a fan. He didn't go back into the racetrack.
Which would have happened if the tire barriers probably weren't there.
Right. Exactly. So, like, you need to, I understand where people are coming from, where they're like, what, why did he flip? Why did he do this? Why did he do that? You know, you look at Formula One, their walls are far away from the racing surface, and most of it's paved. This way, a driver, in theory, could spin and maybe save it or whatever, but every course is different. You know, that's not the case at Monaco. You know, you don't have plenty of room there, and they still race at Monaco. So, point is I think everybody needs to just, I understand where you're coming from, but at the same time, every situation is different. Every situation is unique, and NASCAR and IMSA and IndyCar and all the major series, even Formula One, do a great job at reviewing each track as an individual. They don't say, oh, well, this is a lot, like, they don't look at Talladega and say, oh, this is a lot like Daytona. Like, yes, it is, but at the same time, it's not.
Right.
So, I'm glad to see that driver got away. I don't remember off the top of my head which driver it was, but I'm glad he was able to walk away, or they were able to walk away. But definitely a big moment at a track, at a Sebring track that isn't, like, it's known for speed, but at the same time, that section of track didn't seem like it would have been a rollover accident.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely not.
You know, I remember last corner of the course, the car hit the wall. I think it was driver's side or passenger side, one of the two. And, like, everyone was like, well, it's a big hit. That's also a fast part of the racetrack, you know. So, regardless, glad to see everyone's okay. Definitely speedway safety is an always evolving conversation, no matter what, no matter where, you know, where you are and what you, you know, anything like that. So let's move on real quick to talking about Bristol. So we had the trucks Saturday night and the cup on Sunday, and they didn't dirty the place up. They were racing on the concrete.
Yes.
Let's talk about the truck race, because I feel like the truck race was the most sane race of the weekend.
It usually says a lot.
Right.
Especially when you talk about the truck series.
Now, before we go any further, I want to say the cup race was great.
Yes.
But it was crazy for different reasons.
Oh, yes. Yes, definitely.
But we'll talk about that. But let's talk about the truck race, because I think that, you know, great run. It was Christian Eckes who won. He beat Kyle Busch. And that right there is a talking point alone, because
beating Kyle Busch in trucks, it feels like every time Kyle Busch is starting in a truck series race, it's like, oh, Kyle Busch is going to win. But so whenever someone like a Christian Eckes beats Kyle Busch and Kyle Busch finishes second, it's like, oh.
Exactly. And I think the way he beat Kyle Busch, it wasn't like Kyle Busch got wrecked. It wasn't like Kyle Busch blew a tire. It wasn't like Kyle Busch had an engine issue. He went out and beat Kyle Busch head-to-head on the racetrack.
And on top of that, finishing third was Zane Smith, who's a rookie in the Cup Series, and we know what Zane Smith has done in the Truck Series, too. Right. So he's beat. Eckes finished first, and behind him, second and third, were two Cup Series drivers.
Exactly.
With one of them being probably the best current, the best current NASCAR driver in all three series,
mm-hmm.
and Kyle Busch.
Yeah, I mean, and it was funny because I think it was either the last caution or the second to last caution, Fox played Kyle Busch's in-car audio, and Kyle said, we're a second or third place truck today. Mm. Which, does that mean he was having self-doubt? He was, you know, going against himself? Who knows? Like, who knows, like, how the mind of Kyle Busch, you know? But at the end of the day, he was acknowledging that there were other trucks out there who were better than him. Bristol.
And he said it's a second or third place truck, and he finished second. So right. Kyle Busch was pretty much dead on with what kind of truck he had.
Exactly. But I mean, at the end of the day, Kyle Busch called it, as you said, but also second or third place truck at Bristol. You know, if there's a track that you want to rename, it's Bristol to Kyle Busch's home. You know, Kyle Busch has dominated there. I mean, he's swept the weekend when they have three series there twice. Yes. You know, like he is great at Bristol.
And there's been times he's won both Cup Series races in a Bristol season. I think he did it in 2019 too.
I think so,
More recently, but obviously with the next gen car, which we'll talk about when we get to the Cup Series, is ever since the next gen car, Kyle Busch hasn't figured Bristol out.
Right.
Which says a lot. Kyle Busch struggling at Bristol feels like it's impossible to see.
Right. Exactly. I mean, Kyle Busch brought the caution out twice on Sunday without meaning to. But again, as you said, we'll talk about that. But it just, yeah. Other than that, though, truck race itself was solid.
Yes.
You know, it was a great race. We're going to, the drinking word today is going to be tires. But tire wear in general, for the truck race, oh geez, he's going back in our text messages right now.
No, I wanted to see exactly what you said about the
pulling up
about the truck series race.
Oh, okay. Well, we're gonna get to the topic you and I have been debating over text message for the last 3 days. but I mean, tire wear during the truck race was honestly probably the best you could have seen. You know, they come out, they're strong, and then 30, 40, 50, maybe 60 laps into the race, they start to fall off, and they're not completely falling apart. Hint, hint, wink, wink, we'll get to that. But, it was great. I mean, they did a great job. The series did a great, or the drivers did a great job. They ran clean. They, you know, they weren't out there doing crazy accidents and things like, or crazy, silly stuff to cause accidents and things like that. So, I think it was overall a really good race.
I think so, too.
You know, and of course, Bristol in the last couple of years, besides the dirt, has been hit or miss. Even with the dirt, it was hit or miss. But what I mean is that sometimes you have a race, really good, side by side, all the race, or it's just high line and single file. Nobody passes.
Bristol Spring last year, and I think Bristol in the night race too is like the same thing.
Mm. Well, I'm even saying like 6 or 7 years ago, you know, when it was, they were just, the racing line was enter low, middle high, low off, you know, and that's what everybody did. And that's where NASCAR started applying like the PJ1 and things like that. But to see a truck race and even a cup race come out and they had, you know, it was competitive, different drivers passed, lead, led, you know, like it was good. It was a solid truck race.
I would agree with that.
I think it was good. And I think that that's definitely as a plus for the truck series. Because they've had a couple rough weekends this year.
Yes.
But no. So what are your thoughts, storylines, key points to the truck race?
I mean, I agree with everything you said. I thought it was a nice, calm race. And obviously the exciting points were when the tires wore off.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing this with the truck series, is about 50 to 60 laps, like you said. But, I mean, we've known Christian Eckes ever since really the last couple of years, but really last year, he was a dominant driver last year.
Yep.
And he just knows, I mean, Christian Eckes had 4 wins last year. And did he make the championship 4?
If he didn't, he was close. Like, I remember
I don't quite remember who the championship for was for the truck series race was.
Let me do a little research since you do most of the research here.
But either way, Eckes had a really good year last year. 4 wins, 10 top fives in 23 races with 3 poles, and even early on this year, he's looked good. Finished with his one bad finish being Atlanta, and we finished 32nd, but
Christian Eckes finished 5th in the series.
So he just missed a championship four. So Christian Eckes at Daytona finished 10th. He finished 6th at Vegas. He finished 1 from the pole on Saturday. So he really had that 32nd place finish in Atlanta. But overall, I mean, a really solid driver and a really solid year to back up what he did in 2023.
Right. Not to mention, and this might be a little biased being a Chase Elliott fan, but his paint scheme is on point. you can't see it, folks, but Jordan just rolled his eyes, shook his head, like, "Oh my god!"
I will say his nav seems probably better than Chase Elliott's.
Oh god! I mean, I think it looks good on a truck.
Yeah, that's probably what it is. It's because it's a truck. So really, I don't really remember really any bad paint schemes for a truck. I just feel like any sponsor looks good on a truck.
I think it's half of it is the fact that we see 2 series with cars.
Yeah, and then there's a truck. And it's like, yeah, trucks.
Yeah, it's like, that's different. Like, it looks good. It's different. No, I mean, I agree with you, though. I think, everything was right for the truck series race Saturday night.
And someone I want to talk about, too, is the current points leader, despite not having a win yet, is Tyler Akrum. He finished 5th at Bristol, and so far his finishes were 11th, 7th, 2nd last race at Vegas, and then 5th at Bristol. So he's finished top 10 besides Daytona, which was just outside the top 10 in every single race. So, I mean, obviously he doesn't have the win yet, which you probably would want.
Right.
Or any driver would want. But, I mean, when you get those consistent finishes, the wins don't really matter when it comes to points. Obviously you want to win a race or you're locked into the playoffs, but...
But at the end of the day, the points are what's going to get you to that next round if you have a bad round or something like that. Like, we've heard it so many times, whether it be pre-race or during the race or whatever, Fox or PRN or MRN says it, you know, hey, you can't win the stage, but guess what? Second place still gives out points,
right,
and that could help you later on down the road.
Especially your Tyler Akrum, he left Bristol with 41 more points.
Yeah.
And obviously Christian Eckes had the most, obviously, winning the race, but he ended up with 57, but Akrum finished 5th, and he ended up with the second most points, and he didn't even finish second. Granted, obviously, Kyle Busch and Zane Smith don't get Truck Series points because obviously they're full-time in another series, but...
Right. Yeah. I mean, still, though, it's... Yeah, points are important for sure, and the fact that he hasn't won a race yet and he's still up in the top of the standings is great. It's right. Good for him, and it's impressive, you know? I mean, we saw that last year, though, with, like, was it Truex? Was it last year Truex won the regular season championship? And, yep.
And then he struggled, all playoff long.
He didn't. Well, no, I'm just going to say, I don't even think he had a win last year in the regular season, right?
Or did he won in New Hampshire.
Oh, that's right. We were at that race.
He also won at Sonoma.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I'll show you how much you pay attention.
That was I pay attention.
I just want to point out, guys, that Devin says he's a big race fan, and then he goes and says something like that where he goes, oh, the Trucks won a race when we were literally at one of the races he won last year. He won 3 races last year.
You know, I don't like when you're in person because I can't just mute you on Zoom. I just want to point out.
Nope.
Not happening. Mute you. Okay, just for the record, I've never done that. But anyways.
He just wants to.
It's crossed my mind. No, I'm just kidding. Because my luck, I mute you and then I can't unmute you. I'll be like, uh-oh, hold on. Hang on.
Yes.
So one more truck series topic.
Yes. Nick Sanchez versus Stuart Friesen.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so let's work back. Well, no. Okay, I'm sorry. Let's do a quick recap. Sanchez and Friesen were battling for position.
Mm.
Sanchez had the outside line. He was probably
Was it on the front stretch or back stretch? Bristol's is the only track where this would ever happen at because it's so short.
Dual,
it's like, where are they at? It's like, yeah,
lane,
where are they at?
Hang on. I can review the... It was the front stretch. Okay. So coming off turn 4, Nick Sanchez was about a lane off the wall, came down a little bit. Stuart Friesen was probably 2 lanes up. He was right in the middle of the racetrack. They came off of turn 4. There was a little bit of contact. A little bit of contact between them. Sanchez didn't lift, neither did Friesen. And it results in Sanchez hitting the wall. And when he hit the wall, he bounced off the wall, tagged Stuart Friesen, sends Stuart Friesen for a full 360. He's able to kind of straighten it out, keep going, but unfortunately it more or less ruined his day.
Right.
Sanchez continues on. He also, of course, had damage, so it didn't help him. He didn't go on to win the race, as we talked about. But then post-race, we come to find out. Now, I didn't watch the truck race live, so I will say when you texted me and said, did you see?
Fox didn't show the whole altercation.
I jumped on to Twitter.
Yeah, that's where I saw
it
too.
And I saw something, but I scrolled past it.
Because you're like,
I didn't see the race yet. But then when I watched the race, you had mentioned, did you see? And then I went and looked, and a little bit of an altercation. And now, it started with words, and then... I don't remember if Sanchez said something or if Friesen said something, but then it results in Friesen kind of pushing off of Sanchez, team members getting involved, break him apart.
Just your usual NASCAR confrontation where drivers talking with like 5 million crew members around them, and then once someone grabs the other, it's like, oh, no.
Yeah, I mean, and that makes sense to in my opinion, because
you don't want
you know, your crew members looking out for your driver. Like, they're not like... They're not going to sit there and start placing bets. Like, they're like, okay, if he actually hurts him or causes an issue, then we could get fined. Like, big picture. Now, off camera, Jordan texted me and asked me if I saw it. I reviewed it. And that was probably on Sunday morning. Sunday night?
Yeah.
Sunday afternoon?
Yeah, it was after the cup race.
Okay.
So
for the last 36 hours, let's say, we've been going back and forth.
Yes.
About... Who was right, who was wrong?
Yes.
And obviously, we're not recording this live. I can't have any of you guys listening at home call in, which would be kind of cool. But
maybe coming, maybe soon.
Maybe, who knows?
maybe soon we figure that out.
Maybe one day. But, like, I don't know. Here's what we're going to do to make sure it doesn't become a shouting match between the two of us. I'll give you your side. Like, you say your side, I'll say my side, and then we'll... respectfully debate.
Okay.
So go ahead.
Am I going first? Ahead. Okay. So obviously, I think overall, I mean, it's probably a racing incident anyway, but obviously racing incidents sometimes can be avoided. The picture I'm looking at right now has Friesen coming up on Sanchez out of turn four, like right, pretty much right out at the end of the Geico restart zone.
All right. Friesen coming up. You're wrong already, but keep going. I'm sorry, folks. I just had to do that for the joke. Go on.
And Friesen comes... It looks like Friesen comes up on Sanchez. And now I'm showing my picture right to Devin the whole time so he can actually see it. Obviously, yes, Bristol, obviously there's a one lane, like unlike other really any other track, one lane is, like you said, like, oh, high up against the wall and the end of the turns, they go low. And I think, well, obviously Sanchez and Friesen were running two different lines. Sanchez was higher up on the track more than anything. And Friesen may not have realized, or Friesen spotter may not have realized, he wasn't clear when he came up near the wall when Sanchez was already there. And so he tried to come up towards the wall, and obviously Friesen's bumper was right there. And that's what kind of started it.
So I guess before I you know, rebuttal, who's wrong? Who's in the wrong, in your opinion?
Friesen.
Okay.
Because...
he wasn't clear.
Yeah, because he... I mean, obviously, they're running two different lines, and ultimately, in Bristol, there's cars move up, and cars or trucks move up and down the lanes, but there's ultimately nothing wrong with it, obviously. But yeah,
it's just a racing deal.
Right, and I just think Friesen came up a little too early, because ultimately, I think it caused Friesen to pinch Sanchez into the wall. And I know you told me, which you'd probably say on your rebuttal, is Sanchez probably was going to hit the wall anyway. But you don't know that unless Friesen was clear there.
Mm.
And I just think he can't, obviously, what he did was nothing wrong. Everyone does it. But I just think because Sanchez was running the outside lane on him, he didn't realize he wasn't clear when he tried to come up towards the wall, and it ultimately caused Friesen to go into the wall.
Right. Okay.
Okay, your turn.
So, I realized I playfully interrupted you.
Yep.
Nobody laughed. We don't even have the laugh track on. That was awkward.
I don't even think anybody would laugh anyway when they watch this, when they listen to this.
Wow. Jeez. Okay. No, but in all seriousness, I agree with you in the sense that, yes, it was a racing accident.
Yes.
You know, it wasn't anything malicious. It wasn't like Sanchez says, I'm going to go get his bumper. It wasn't like Friesen said, I'm going to block him.
It wasn't like a right hook or like
right.
I don't know.
These guys are...
Or what Kyle Larson usually does to his own teammates.
There is no history between the two of them. Maybe clean racing history,
right,
but nothing where it was... bad.
The only thing I've really seen Nick Sanchez have a problem with was Matt Crafton last year, and I think it was Talladega.
Mm.
It happened, and I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yes, yes, I do.
But so I think that's the only incident Sanchez has had in his second year in the trucks.
Yeah, I mean, it is obviously it's tough. You mentioned it. It's tough to call if you know. It's tough to play the what-if game. Well, if Stewart wasn't there, Sanchez was going to hit the wall. If Sanchez wasn't there, Stewart was going to run his line. It's like, it's tough to sit there and guess what would or could have happened. What we know happened is Sanchez... just going to mute Jordan's mic here for a minute. I didn't interrupt you. He's looking at the mixer now, like, what do I do to unmute myself? That's not yours. That one is.
Can I interrupt you for one second?
Oh, my gosh.
It may have looked like Sanchez was going to hit the wall because his line never was not going to change. Because right. Obviously in the turns, he stayed exactly where he was. He never moved up. He never moved down. So that's right. Probably why it looked like he was going to hit the wall, because you don't usually see Chuck's really run that lane.
But to play devil's advocate to that thought, did he get run up the racetrack by Friesen? You know, like,
I don't think Friesen ran him up the track. Like I said in my
right,
my thing was Friesen was doing his line, running his line. But obviously, so either his spotter, Friesen's spotter, or Friesen, maybe a little of both, probably more his spotter than anything, didn't realize Sanchez was there. He probably thought he was clear, and he wasn't. So as he was trying to come up and continue running his line, Sanchez's nose was right there.
So okay, here's my take on this. I don't think, so I understand where Friesen's frustration is coming from, because he got tagged by Sanchez into the wall and unfortunately most likely ruined his race, right? Because he went a full 360, whether or not there was damage or not, or a lot of damage or not, you know, you're now possibly a lap down. Like, there's so many things that came from this for Friesen. I don't personally see this being anybody's fault in particular. I mean, do I think Sanchez is in the wrong? Yeah, he should have lifted, in my opinion. Do I think Friesen should have maybe came down a little bit because of his spotter? Yeah. But at the end of the day, in my opinion, if I'm going to pick a side to say you're in the wrong, it's Sanchez. Because as I said to you, Stewart doesn't care that Sanchez is behind him. That's racing. You know, Sanchez is the one I'm looking at, you know, looking at the from the flag stand view here, and I'm showing Jordan, don't worry. He's hitting the wall before he even makes contact with Friesen, right?
There. Well, Friesen's already touching him right there. Because watch, when they go to the front stretch, Friesen already gets turned. They already have contact when Sanchez hits the wall.
But if you look close enough, right?
There's contact right there.
There. He's in the wall.
Yes, right? But there's contact right there.
And then, boom. Because
he bounces off the wall and hits Friesen.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, but he was in the wall before he hit Friesen. Nope.
See, there's contact originally right there. And that put Sanchez in the wall.
But
because Sanchez bounced off of Friesen's right rear fender.
But right there,
hits the wall and bounces off again.
Ready? Right there.
There's contact.
Right before he. Oh, there's a little bit of separation right there.
No, there's not. You can see the smoke.
And then he hits the wall.
You can see the smoke right there from the contact.
See, I don't agree. I think that Sanchez should have lifted. You saw it in the cup race. When guys were on the outside, they would lift to then be able to fall in line or even make the corner. I think if you look at the trajectory of that corner for Sanchez, remove Stewart from the equation, Sanchez is going to have to lift regardless of if Stewart's there or not, because the trajectory of that corner says he's hitting the wall.
But the only reason he hit the wall in that thing was because
no.
Even Friesen spun, originally Friesen made contact with Sanchez, or
I'm saying
they both made contact.
But I'm saying Friesen, before he even made the contact, his arc was going to suggest he goes into the wall. He has to lift regardless.
Yeah, suggest.
The momentum.
Suggest.
The momentum and the arc of his car would, yes, you're right, suggest that he's going to hit the wall. Meaning he has to lift regardless of if Friesen is there or not.
But it's hard to lift when you're already connected, because before he even made contact
with Stewart. Now, let's put into the factor, if he makes a little contact with Stewart, yeah, then that kind of pushes your car straight in the corner, and then, yeah. But regardless, you're going to have to lift anyways, and Stewart has the line because he's in front. Right?
Yeah, but if you're Sanchez, you can't. You're trying to get a spot. You can't just lift because
you're
playing you're more on the outside line than Friesen is.
I agree, but I mean, any rook or any veteran driver, if we had Denny Hamlin sitting here, William Byron, anybody, they would say, or most likely would say, I'll put that asterisk there, that you live to fight another corner. Let off on the exit of turn four, fall in line, and then guess what? You're now on his bumper into turn one, where you could either then go to the outside or try and drop low. You just have to be smart. If you look at Friesen, Sanchez or not, he's going to make a clean exit off the corner. Yeah, he's a little higher up than everybody else, but that's his line, as you said.
Well,
Sanchez wasn't running his line.
Well, he came low, and then when he went to turn, that's when he went up. That wasn't his line going. I don't think he was. I think he was halfway down originally, like halfway through the turn.
He was in the middle of the corner the whole time.
Yeah, and then that was three quarters up.
Yeah, because
and Sanchez is already there.
Because if you look at his exit, that's his line on the exit. Like right here, he's pointed to run in line with that wall.
He's pointing at the wall.
Nope. He's pointed in line to then make a clean exit off the corner. If you follow his trajectory, I can't say that word. If you follow where he's intended and most likely going to go, he is going to come straight off. Yeah, right. You're showing me the same photo. He's going to come right here, right up against the wall, maybe a little higher than the rest of the field, but that's his line. He had been running that line all race.
I'm looking at, I don't know who this is behind him right here.
No, I gotcha.
He's halfway. Friesen goes from where this truck is to, he comes up.
I mean, he's higher than where that truck is.
Right.
Right there, maybe.
There's contact originally right there.
Right there.
Just right there, because you can see Friesen get a little loose, and then that's kind of what pushed Sanchez up more, and then obviously Friesen still going his line.
I still don't think Sanchez. I think Sanchez should have lifted, because if you look at where he is, I mean, he's in the third lane. You know, he should have here.
And we've seen
lifted and then been able to fall in behind Friesen.
And at Bristol, we've seen drivers run the third lane all the time, and they don't lift and they don't hit the wall.
But most of them do. If their car is ill handling, they'll lift. If they have good exit.
But Sanchez's truck was handling well the whole time.
But regardless, he was going to hit the wall.
You don't know that.
I mean, you don't know that either.
You said you don't know that either.
I'm just saying.
You said maybe he hits the wall.
The line in which he's running, the suggestive path of him going forward, is going to lead me to believe that he's hitting the wall. And Friesen's coming off the corner clean. Besides, live to fight another corner. That's the way I look at it. But all we know is that Friesen did not agree with Sanchez being there. Goes up to Sanchez, gets into him, goes up against him and makes it very clear that, you know, he was not happy with Sanchez and his move. I mean, Sanchez he's a young driver too. You know, he's got stuff he needs to learn. I mean, we're looking at a clip now on NASCAR.com that might have a little bit more information. Of course, it's Kyle Petty giving his two cents on it. I mean, right there, Sanchez is high. He's doing the arc corner.
Yeah, but actually, go play that back again. It looked like Sanchez went down a little bit, and then he had to come back up, right?
Right.
There he goes. There, he moved down, and then so now he's in where Friesen was out of the turn. So he did come down originally, and then when Friesen came up, it pushed Sanchez up, which is why I said Friesen pinched Sanchez up and why he couldn't check up.
All right, I'll give you that one.
Because obviously, I'm Bristol. I mean, obviously, stuff happens quick.
Right,
so,
right.
Obviously, with Sanchez came down into the second lane where Friesen was. But obviously, when Friesen was coming up at that point, had to move Sanchez up. And obviously, with how fast they were going, you don't really have the reflex to be like, oh, I got to check up. It's just whatever happens, happens.
I will say, though, looking at the video right now of the fight, right before Friesen hits him, Sanchez is smiling and looks like he makes some sort of wise guy remark.
Yeah, you could probably tell that
from
the beginning with because I mean the whole conversation was just Nick Sanchez smiling, so you had to assume you said.
But I also just wonder though if Sanchez, I also just wonder if Sanchez also he just, I don't want to say he's young. Well, he is young, but like, is he just simply a young driver in the sense that with the situation he should have lifted, you know, then in the post race, should he have taken a more defensive role instead of being a wise guy?
Well, it's kind of like...
I mean, he looked like he was the Joker there. Like, the right. smile on his face, like, he was like, like, it looks weird, you know? Like, and whatever, that's, I'm not trying to make fun of Nick Sanchez. Like, every driver's their own person. But right. imagine this older driver, Stuart Friesen, upset, walking up to this younger driver, and that's what he's met with. I'm now upset. I'm Friesen. I'm upset because you're not taking this seriously.
Right, and obviously, it's kind of like, I think Nick Sanchez did the same thing when Matt Crafton... had a conflict with him at Talladega in the fall.
Right.
Nick Sanchez doing the same thing. So it's kind of more like, I don't remember quite that incident, if it was Sanchez or Crafton that really started it, like the incident on track. But I think it's kind of how the younger drivers, the personalities are different with the veteran drivers and the younger drivers, like obviously Xfinity Series, you have Allgaier, mm-hmm. and then you have like, or Sam Mayer, or at the time Ty Gibbs,
mm-hmm.
or Noah Gregson, who's still kind of on the younger side, but I would consider him a veteran in NASCAR because he's been racing. I think he was in trucks when he was like 18.
Yeah, he was in the truck series, and then
obviously him and Ty Gibbs had the whole conflict in 2022 in the Xfinity Series, like the whole year, and it's kind of more like Gregson's been there, or this is Ty Gibbs' first year, and I think Ty Gibbs was 19 at the time.
I mean, I think, yeah, and there's nothing wrong with your age. There's nothing wrong with how you handle yourself. Like, I mean, I know I just kind of sounded like, I don't want to say I was making fun of him, but like, kind of came off wrong. But like, point is like, it's all about how you handle yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if somebody comes up to you to fight you or comes up to you upset, don't look like. Don't look like you don't care. Like, don't look like whatever, buddy.
Yeah.
Go back home. You know, like be professional enough. And I mean, Stewart runs dirt tracks up here in New York.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so the point is he is a short track driver who runs in the dirt stuff here in New York. He deals with all sorts of drivers. Did you not know that?
No, I'm just confused that you're saying here in New York.
Sorry, up here in New England, in the Northeast is what I meant. Obviously, we're in New Hampshire. But, like, he runs the local short tracks over in New York. Mm-hmm. You know, so point is he deals with all sorts of drivers. You know, it's not just like, oh, I'm a NASCAR star. Like, you want to talk about grassroots dirt truck or dirt...
dirt racing.
Dirt racing. Dirt racer in the truck series. There you go. So
it's just like Kyle Larson.
Right, exactly. So, whatever. I mean, at the end of the day, what we know is that there was contact between the two of them. I mean, the only way you could really come up to a better situation is by looking at the telemetry, mm-hmm. which we don't have access to.
Right.
But, like, if you look at that, there might, you know, that might say, oh, well, Sanchez was at X amount of throttle, then they make contact. Oh, he rolls out of the gas. That's because of it. You know, like NASCAR does it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, oh, Chase Elliott,
right corner, right hooks.
Denny Hamlin into the wall, right rears him into the wall. That's where I was going with it.
Well, it was a right hook.
Let's go. Well, yeah, but like, let's go look at the data. And then NASCAR is able to tell, oh, yeah, he did it on purpose. Mm-hmm. Like, he turned the wheel to the left.
I would say it's like the Bubba Wallace and Larson incident. I think it was Kansas in 22.
Was it Kansas or Vegas?
Oh, either one. It might have been Vegas, track, actually. But I mean, obviously, that one was a little different because, you know, it was kind of obvious that one was on purpose because Bubba Wallace did drive all three lanes down the track just to get to Larson. So that one was a little obvious, but it's the same thing.
But, like, with the Elliott and Hamlin situation, Elliott comes out and says, no, I couldn't turn. Mm-hmm. Then NASCAR goes, well, no, according to your computer in your car, you turned left. You know,
your car could turn.
Yeah, your car could turn. It just turned the wrong way.
Obviously, something like that. I mean, obviously, drivers aren't going to be like, yeah, I right hooked them on purpose.
Well, we've seen that happen.
Unless you're Kevin Harvick, who just doesn't care.
I was going to say, we've seen that happen. I just did it.
I mean, obviously, probably one of the most iconic moments over the last few years is Kenseth and Logano Martinsville. Mm. And you already know exactly where I'm going with
2015.
It. Where it was obvious Kenseth took him out on purpose. But on the radio, I don't know if you ever saw the radio actor for that. Yeah. Kenseth the Screw Chief goes, oh, I guess we lost the right rear there. And Kenseth like, goes, yeah, I just...
Right front tires down.
Yeah, right front just went down. I couldn't control it.
And who knows?
And obviously, people knew that I was on purpose, but Kenseth was not going to go on the radio. He goes, yeah, I just did it on purpose.
But I mean, also back then, they didn't have the technology in the car to be able to look at that telemetry.
That's true.
You know, so you could, in theory, get away with it and be like, I don't know.
I don't know what happened.
Something broke. I mean, and granted, now NASCAR knew that that was on purpose.
Right. Yeah, you know, well, I think Kenseth went out and said earlier that I'm going to get him back.
Oh,
so.
Yeah, exactly. Well,
and then when it did, he was like, oh, I didn't do it. Oh, my right rear. My right front. Oh.
But yeah, anyways. So yeah, I think, like I said, the two of them collided. Stuart Friesen confronts him. You know, there's really nothing more to it. No. And it's just something to keep in the back of your mind going forward. Next truck race, I'm not sure where it is, but next
Dakota.
Oh, that's right. So this weekend, if there's something where they get near each other and they make contact, it's like adding another chapter to the book. It's not, oh, what? Where did that come from? Well, let me go back to Bristol.
Yeah.
You know, so keep that in mind going forward. Like I said, I personally think Sanchez should have lifted. I can understand where you're coming from, where he, you know, Friesen might have pinched him up. It's tough. Also, those corners, they get narrow on the exit.
They
you know,
do.
So it might have been again going back to Sanchez's youngness, going, oh, I got into the wall, I'll just ride it off, and then all of a sudden, boom, there's a wall.
Right.
You know, like who knows? And again, without us either being in the car, seeing the telemetry, or having it on board, or whatever, or having one of them sitting here, we don't know.
Right.
So, any other thoughts on the truck race?
No, I think that's it.
Okay. So, let's talk about the cup race. And what we're going to do is we're going to go over the quick recap, and then we'll talk about the tire situation.
Yes.
Because kind of like what we did with the truck race, let's talk about the quick recap, and then we'll talk about that freeze in Sanchez. You know, like things that are going to take a long time to talk about. So, overall... good race, competitive. We had...
I mean, you can definitely say it's competitive. I mean...
we had Ty Gibbs sweep the two stages, one and two. He was pretty dominant. But right from the get-go, you started to see the tire issue. Teams immediately started making adjustments. NASCAR did a great job of making adjustments by providing an extra set of tires and all that. Now... William Byron hits the wall.
Yep.
We throw a caution.
And it messed up his toe link.
We have a restart. Jordan's going to get caught off guard with what I'm about to say. Tyler Reddick goes around. Hold on. We have a huge snack up behind there. They show a single replay, and they go to commercial break, and they never touch on it again.
Yep. And they Fox never showed the stack up either. They were just Reddick spinning.
So I'm a huge supporter of Fox.
Oh.
Jordan's more NBC.
Yeah.
But I will admit that moment, I was watching the TV going, are you kidding me? They showed a replay of the stack up going to break.
And one thing... and
that
one,
was it.
And one thing, well, going back to that, was they did it at Phoenix, too, when Hamlin spun by himself. And there was a... side-by-side
like
battle for the lead.
Yeah.
And they didn't show the battle for the lead. They were just focused on Hamlin. They were showing, like, the middle of the pack, but you could see Hamlin in it because kind of how the camera angle was. And I don't even know who was at front at that point. But there was two cars. I think Reddick was one of them, and he was side-by-side with someone else. Hamlin spun, and they didn't show the side-by-side battle for the lead. And everyone knew because obviously in the camera, you see, oh, there's two cars up front side by side.
Right.
It's like, oh, who is that? What's going on?
So that I will say kind of upset me. Anyways, so Ty Gibbs sweeps the stages. And at that point in the first end of the first stage, we started to acknowledge the trend of tire issues. Denny Hamlin gets in the wall and then Kyle Busch blows a tire, unrelated. Kyle Busch drives backwards down the racetrack.
Yeah, which I feel like it's at this point not a NASCAR season unless Kyle Busch does it at least once a year.
Oh, yeah.
Because he did it last year. I forget which track he did it at.
He did it 1 year at Charlotte. He did another year at...
He did it last year, too.
He did. No, yeah.
I forget what track he did it at, but either way,
yeah.
I mean, it's not a NASCAR season unless Kyle Busch does that
once. Without Kyle Busch doing that.
Yeah. So it's officially NASCAR season.
Exactly. But, I mean, so you have basically... Your accidents on Sunday were related to tire issues, which, again, we'll talk about more in a minute. But then last run of the race, Goodyear releases an extra set of tires, and they're running, and it looks like a video game. And because of everybody hitting pit road and driving slow and all that, and then Denny Hamlin, Truex wind up battling it out for the win. Truex get by Hamlin. Hamlin uses lap traffic to his advantage. Hamlin wins the race.
It almost wasn't to his advantage, although he was having trouble at that point because Truex, I mean, made his lead from almost 2 second lead to
nothing.
A tenth of a second, just like that, because he couldn't pass.
Right, exactly.
But since you just said it feels like a video game.
Oh, I saw
that. I saw the video of Briscoe posting on Twitter of him on fresher tires. No one else is. He's just...
So
it's like NASCAR Heat 5 on easy mode.
What was it? I think Roush Fenway Keselowski posted the same type of video, and they did it like where it was Super Mario Brothers, where they came off a pit road, and he got like the mystery box, and it was a set of tires, and then it was like, and he was like passing everybody. I saw it on Instagram, but it was social media gold for them. Like, well done by... Again, I believe.
Did you ever
Roush Fenway Keselowski?
Did you ever see what the track looked like after the race?
Yeah,
all the tire rubber,
a lot of marbles. It was
a lot of tire. I guess that's technically the wording for it. It was marbles.
Insane. Hang on. I thought they posted it, or was it Chris Buescher? Yeah, here you go. And it literally is just his onboard of him going by, you know, slower vehicles, but it's with the Mario Kart, you know, music.
And he's just going past everyone. Yeah. Like I said, it was really NASCAR Heat 5 on...
It was great. And real quick, all credit to Chris Buescher and his social media team for posting that.
Yes.
Before somehow we get sued. But no, it was awesome. It was funny and it was like I said, it seemed like a video game. You know, I was watching the race, and I mean, I don't know how many times people at home have watched like played NASCAR Heat on whether it be PS5 or Xbox or even on iRacing, where you set it to, let's say, ridiculous amount of tire wear. So you play the tire wear strategy game, and you're like the first to pit road, you get tires, then everybody else slows down, and you're flying by, and you're lapping everybody. It felt like that,
it really did.
On TV. It was like, okay, and because at one point, it was just Alex Bowman on the lead lap. Yeah. Everybody else was down a lap. I was like, are you kidding me? And Clint Bowyer and Kevin Harvick kept saying, there better not be a caution, because that was going to trap most of the field down a lap.
Yep.
And imagine if that caution had come out. How that could have created so much chaos.
Well, it didn't matter because at the end of the race, there was only 5 cars on the lead lap anyway,
But I'm saying when Bowman was the only car on the lead lap, he gets caught, or there's a caution, he would then be the only car on the lead lap, and then one other car would get the free pass, everybody else would be on a lap down.
Yep.
So there would just be basically a 2-car race.
Yep.
So it's just, it's crazy. Now, this can kind of cycle into talking about the tire situation. NASCAR, they acknowledge it. They're doing the teams are doing the tire strategy, and immediately they're saying, you know, NASCAR might cut this race short because we don't have tires.
Mm-hmm.
For those of you who might not have caught it, basically what was happening was 50 laps into the run, not even.
It was like 20. It was generally 20 laps on the run. Tires were going down.
Tires were, and tire wear is good. Right, you want tire wear, and
but not extreme levels like that. Where it's like, oh, we gotta go back to 20 laps, and gotta go back.
Well, I was gonna say everybody for the last I don't know what feels like 2 years have been saying we need tire wear, we need tire wear, and what was happening was you were having tire wear to the point where if you ran 50 laps, you were going down to the cords.
Yeah, you're on your rim.
And yeah, and it was so bad. And immediately NASCAR does their math and they realize, okay, these teams need another set of tires. Goodyear brings an extra set, which is always good. So Goodyear releases those. That allowed for these teams to make it all the way home to the end of the race. Goodyear comes out mid-race. I think it was like Bob Pockrass puts it on Twitter. And Goodyear comes out and says, we don't understand what's happening.
Yeah, and during the race, I don't know if you missed it. They interviewed the Goodyear tire. I forgot who he was for Goodyear, but whatever it was. They're interviewing during the race, and they were like, NASCAR told us to make a tire that has more tire wear.
Right.
But they said from the Bristol night race in September, the track has reacted differently than what it did at the night race.
They brought the same tire from last year.
Yeah.
Like, what the tire they ran on Sunday was the same exact compound and everything from what they ran in September. Mm-hmm. And the biggest thing that people were saying was, sure, a spring race at Bristol could be warmer depending on when, you know, if the sun is out and things like that. But the track temperature was similar to September. The weather was similar to September. Everything was similar. The only thing that was different was they put the resin down instead of the PJ1.
Which is, like, we usually put the resin for the dirt track, when it was Bristol Dirt, I believe, is what I was hearing people say. And a lot of people, like Chase Briscoe, I think it was Chase Briscoe at the end. Oh, no, it was Alex Bowman, actually.
Mm.
Alex Bowman on, I think it was his Fox interview, said, I don't know what was going on out there with the tires, but I think it was a lot of people, but he says he thinks the resin had to do with the tires being like that instead of the PJ1.
Well, I mean, and Tire Wear 101 says that your tires obviously are going to wear. It's the same thing with our car tires. If you are going on the track doing 50 laps at 100% with no tire or tire rubber buildup, you're going to wear tires, right? It's the same thing with what was happening. If you looked at that track, you're used to seeing concrete tracks, whether it be Martinsville, in the corners, Dover, or Bristol. They lay down rubber during the race, and then during caution, you know, they'll pick it back up, then they'll lay it back down. It looked like it was a brand new racetrack the entire race, except for the marbles. Yeah. But even then, the concrete did not take rubber. And like you said, the question is was it the resin? Was it the resin that was getting spread across the racetrack and it was causing the rubber not to go down? Ryan Blaney came out and said, well, it's clear that they brought a new tire compound. They just didn't test it.
Right.
Which I saw that. And
they did a tire test at Bristol, the Goodyear person said, but
it wasn't for
what this race was supposed to be for.
Right. Like, they did a Goodyear tire test before last September's race, which was good, and then they brought the same tire compound twice. He did, as you mentioned, acknowledge that NASCAR and the teams were asking for, you know, a different a tire compound that would wear and everything. But he also acknowledged that they didn't bring it. Like, it wasn't like they said, you know what? Let's try this.
Mm-hmm.
Like they didn't bring the soft tire compound F1 runs. You know, like, they brought what they brought in September. So definitely something about the track was different. Now, I will tell you that, as Clint Bowyer and Kevin Harvick said, tire science is, you know, so much more elaborate than it was 5, 10, 15 years ago. NASCAR, I bet they, maybe not still, but they were definitely figuring, they were at the track at Bristol. You know, Goodyear probably left a representative to say, go take sample data, you know, and then they're going to figure out, was it the resin? You know, did the resin cause no rubber to be put down, and then this just the heat of the competition caused this? Regardless, it was an issue. Now,
there's not many times you can really look at and watch a NASCAR race and you go, all the teams ran out of set of tires. That never happens. And here we are, like, halfway through, and it's like every team doesn't have any more set of tires.
My question to you is this, and I think they asked Ryan Blaney this. Was this race, was it bad? Or was it simply that they did not have enough tires? Like, if Goodyear came out and said, hey, instead of 9 sets, we're going to give you 12. Is that a bad race?
No.
Right. I agree.
It was a great race. It's definitely going to be one to, it's going to be talked about when we every time we're back at Bristol was, oh, that, do you remember?
That one time we were doing 35?
Do you remember the 2024 Bristol spring race?
I mean, I think that it's, I don't think it's a bad race. I think the quote-unquote bad part to that is that they didn't have enough tires. Mm-hmm. But I think if Goodyear had said you're going to have 11 sets or 12 sets, then heck yeah.
And
we
actually
got tire fall off.
I saw either Jeff Gluck or Bob Pockrass say when Kyle Busch had the first incident, mm-hmm. is Richard Childress actually went to the NASCAR hauler that morning couple hours before the race, whatever it was, mm-hmm. and they said, you guys are going to have a tire problem today. Because it was like that in qualifying, too.
Yeah.
It was probably the most intense qualifying session that I've ever watched.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. There is something wrong.
The qualifying sessions are 2 laps.
Right.
Or 1 lap.
It doesn't line up, right? They went out, they did a tire test. Last year, they ran this at Bristol in the spring or September. It was fine. Then they run it the same tire compound in the spring, completely different. So here's my take on this. You either one, the tire resin or the resin caused issues, or two, Goodyear tried to tweak the tire compound. Maybe if it was just a little bit. Right, maybe they said, okay, instead of this, we'll take it down a notch or two. And because of that notch or two, they missed completely. And unfortunately, if that's the case, it would take a lot for Goodyear or any organization to come out and say, so sorry, we did this. I think the fact that they released an extra set of tires was huge. You know, I think the fact that Goodyear has that as a backup is huge.
I think
it's good that way they handled it.
Yeah.
But definitely more question marks than anything.
I feel like they should have released more. I don't know how many tires Goodyear had, obviously. Because mm-hmm. Goodyear was running low, too. I feel like they should have released more than one set. Because even after that one set, there was another problem. They don't have any more tires.
Right.
And obviously, like, there was a lot of tire strategy. Like, I think at one point, Brad Keselowski had scuffs on the left side and stickers on the right.
Mm-hmm.
Or vice versa, but... So it was like if people had different sets of tires on their cars,
right.
And it was like, oh, let's see how this works.
I mean, exactly. I mean, and at the end of the day, you know, that's part of the strategy.
And some sets were working better than other sets were. Like, I think Kyle Larson at one point had his fifth set was better than what his sixth set was or something like that.
Right. It's, I don't know. It's weird how it happened. Something happened, and whether or not it's the resin, I mean, that seems to be the most, I don't want to say obvious, but the one thing that everyone's going, it was because of, because that's the most known compound or known component to the equation that was different. But at the same time, that much of a fall off, you know, like it's kind of like, are we sure?
Yeah, 20 laps of the tires are falling off on a half a mile short track.
And they only put it on
crazy.
The first lane in the corners. They didn't do the whole track. Like, I don't know. I mean, the resin seemed to do its job because most of the, that's the other thing. It was the tires were wearing quicker if you were running the top line where the resin wasn't.
Mm-hmm. Oh, one thing
hold on, hold that thought. So, if you're wearing the tires more outside the resin, then it's not the resin that's the issue, in my opinion.
Well, yeah, that is true.
Right?
Yeah.
Because if drivers were on the bottom line and they were blowing tires, well, okay, then it's the resin.
Right. Yeah.
But if they were fine on the bottom and Kyle Busch went onto the high line to try and do an out of bounds, a high line pass and blows a tire because of the heat where the resin isn't, Anyways, maybe the resin is the reason the track wasn't taking rubber.
Yeah, that's probably.
And maybe that's the case. But still, it was like, made you think. Anyways, what were you going to say?
But I'm going to go off topic for a quick second.
Okay.
Who taught Kevin Harvick the younger lingo?
So if you listen to this podcast,
I love it because
if you listen to Happy Hour, there's definitely some younger lingo being thrown around during that, and I think that's where he's learning.
And Kevin Harvick, like right before the race, they went to Kyle Larson's team communications. Harvick goes, you know, if you're Kyle Larson's crew, you don't really gotta do much because all you gotta do is sit around and let him cook. And Mike Joy and Clint Boyer started dying laughing, and it was like, and I saw it on Twitter. It was like, who's teaching Kevin Harvick all this?
I mean,
because there was a couple weeks ago he said something to. Oh, he's got that dog in him, yeah, or something said, like during a qualifying session.
And he said something to Bubba Wallace, right? Oh, the paint scheme's lit, and Bubba was like, "No, don't say that." But
I forgot who he was talking about, but there was one race where he's like, "Oh, yeah, this driver's got that dog in him," and everyone was like, "Whoa!"
I mean,
Harvick
on his podcast. What's happening? On his podcast, there was talks of like, I don't remember if it was Boyer or somebody on the podcast was giving him like keywords like, work this in to try and make like this week's word is. And it might be that, or it might be the fact that his son is what, 16, 17?
Is Keelan 16?
Keelan?
I think there's no way Keelan's 16.
Hold on.
Am I getting that old? I remember when Keelan was like 8.
Keelan Harvick. Google this kid. Oh wait, Keelan Harvick age is a Google. Oh. Nope. Hold on, I don't. Is that him? Okay, so he's 11, according to this.
I was gonna say, there's no way he's 16. I'm definitely more older than him than that.
He's young, but either way, it makes you wonder if maybe Keelan is making him speak in the younger terms.
Would an 11-year-old be able to do that?
I mean, talk to Kaylin, my sister.
Oh, that's true.
She's saying stuff that it's like, wait, what did you just say? One of her friends said that instead of saying obviously, she just said Avi.
Avi.
I'm like, what did you? Okay. Anyways, so who knows? But I agree with you. It is kind of funny where it's like,
how was Kevin Harvick again?
Kevin just said what? But
I think
he's
Harvick,
having fun with it.
Yeah, I definitely think Harvick in the booth has feels like a rejuvenated Mike Joy, and like just because obviously he's fresh out, he's been in the next gen car. Boyer has not,
right?
So Boyer can't. I mean, obviously he does, but like Boyer doesn't really have know everything obviously about the next gen car because he's never been in it. But Harvick just retired after this past season, so. He's like, oh, yeah, the next gen does this, next gen does this.
Boyer does also, though, have the racing in general knowledge, which is good.
But you're right, when it comes to the next gen, but Harvick's like, oh, I got this.
Yeah, exactly. When it comes to...
Let me cook.
When it comes... Oh, my gosh. But no, I mean, exactly, you're right. In my opinion, you're right on that, because it's like Boyer can sit there and... Like, it's a good dynamic. Mike Joy brings the history and the stats and the facts. Clint Boyer brings the general racing knowledge about how a car is going to react to a hot track or a cold track or whatever. And then Harvick brings the specifics of the next gen car.
Yes.
You know, like it all works together. So I think Fox Sports' booth right now is firing off on all cylinders.
Yes. And
by the way, to Jamie Little, I hope she feels better. She wasn't doing the truck race this week because she's sick.
I was gonna say I noticed her voice did not sound the same during the pit reporting, but
some of the Twitter people were saying
do the truck race.
I thought she did last week or at Phoenix.
She did, but maybe she usually does. Oh no, she usually does do the Xfinity. It's just on the
no,
track.
Adam does Xfinity.
I got mixed up. Jamie does ARCA and truck.
Right, and then I noticed she wasn't in there, which. The reason why I'm bringing this up is because during the week last week, I saw some things on social media where it was like, oh, Jamie Little's not doing well.
Yeah.
We've talked about it.
Yeah.
And then I didn't see her in the truck race, and I was like, did Fox really pull a move?
Right.
And then the cup race, her voice was not there. So I think it was more so that she was sick. So Fox did pull a move, but it was kind of like a, you know, hey, we're going to protect... We're going to help. You know, you got to take a day off, go get better.
Right.
But anyways, hope she feels better soon.
But going back to the tire wear thing and obviously the short track package, we talked about it. Was Phoenix last week? Yeah.
Yeah.
So we talked about
This wasn't a short track package, though.
That is true. That's
want to put that out there, but go on.
But obviously, we talk. Obviously, people are like, NASCAR, that is how you do a short track racing. You just don't try to make it a package. Obviously, Bristol's Bristol, and obviously, it's hit or miss anyway, but
Bristol's its own animal.
But Phoenix was just not that great action wise. And Bristol was just like, oh my God, it felt like the Hunger Games. Like, oh, this tire, there goes this tire. Oh, this driver, oh, this tire's gone, you know? Mm-hmm. And I saw a tweet and I showed you it, and I believe you agreed, from Jordan Bianchi of The Athletic.
Mm-hmm.
And he said tire wear for Bristol is similar to Martinsville, Richmond, Phoenix, Loudoun, and North Wilkesboro.
The tire package, you're saying, not tire wear.
No, tire wear similar to this at Martinsville, Richmond, Phoenix, Loudoun, and North Wilkesboro.
That's what I mean. Like, tire compound is what they'll run.
And then he said, he said, we'll do one is to fix what ails the short track package. So he goes, if tire wear is like, I mean, obviously Loudoun, there was tire wear, but not like that.
Not like that.
And, but, because the tire wear at Loudoun made the cars more closer. It wasn't like 2x1 by five seconds.
Made them tougher to drive.
Yeah.
And,
obviously, Loudoun's a track where NASCAR's tried to fix, because obviously
there was a
over
patch
the last
there.
Yeah, there was a patch where it was like, oh my God, this stinks.
Another race.
But over we're at New Hampshire. I'm not watching.
I think there's golf on.
But over the last few years, New Hampshire's gotten better because they've tried, along with the other short tracks, to try to make it better. And because New Hampshire's not necessarily a short track, it's a mile long, but it races like
runs like a short track.
Like NBC says every time, it races like a Martinsville.
It's Martinsville on steroids is really what Loudoun is. But so here's my thing on that. If that is the same tire compound that we're going to run at Martinsville, Wilkesboro, Richmond, Loudoun, all these other short tracks, two things. One, was that the same tire compound we ran at Phoenix last week? I don't think it was.
I don't think it was.
And two.
No, because if the tires were different. I think NASCAR said the tires at Bristol would be different.
Okay. So if that's the same tire compound that we run at the other courses, first of all, don't touch it when we go to Richmond next week. Let's see how it acts at Richmond on an asphalt track.
In 2 weeks.
2 weeks, sorry. Let's see how it acts on an asphalt track in 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And two, if it reacts the same way, bring extra tires. Don't touch it.
Right. Like, don't keep it like that.
Like I can, but here's the counter to what I'm saying though. More tires, more money.
Yeah.
And that's where I think NASCAR, same thing with the horsepower conversation.
It was like, no money.
Yeah.
We
NASCAR's going to turn around and say, well, we're trying to save the team's money. I get that. But at the end of the day, if the teams had to spend a little bit more money to have a show like Bristol every week, you're going to, it might take a minute, but it will bring new interest. I mean, did you see?
And it's going to give.
Hold on. Go ahead.
And it's going to give drivers, more of the younger drivers, more experience in.
Driving a car? We got an airplane going out.
The tire wear management. Obviously, the younger drivers aren't experienced in that yet.
Right.
As Denny Hamlin said in his interview, Martin Truex said in his interview, two of the veterans, and Brad Keselowski, they finished top three. And they've all been in the Cup Series for almost 20 years.
Right.
Actually, Truex might be in 20 years now.
Might be.
And Hamlin's closing in on that. But actually, Keselowski's not close to that, actually.
So here's the other thing.
But either way, I mean, Hamlin said, once I knew there was a tire wear management race, I knew I had a chance at this.
Right.
And Truex even said, at the end, like in his race interview, he was like, I felt like I could have gotten to him if I didn't try to use all my tires to try to get up close to him. Because Truex used more of his tires, obviously, being second than Denny would being the leader.
Right.
So, obviously, that it caused Truex to lose more of his tires, so he couldn't get to Hamlin. And meanwhile, Brad Keselowski, smile on his face, goes, oh, I like this kind of racing. This is awesome. This is awesome. And he finished third, obviously. He's on a long race. He's on a long winless streak, and obviously, because he has not once he's been in RFK, and this is his third year now in RFK.
Right.
His last race win was actually in 2021, where he won one race. So
here's the other side to this.
But Keselowski was like, "Oh yeah, this is awesome. I love this. I love this kind of racing." Because Hamlin said it, and Kozlowski said it, I don't think Truex said it, was this is what their race, like it was a grassroots short track racing again,
right.
Where it's not like, oh, it's pedal to the metal until our car burns up. No, it's we've got to protect our stuff, which is what the short tracks around here, the racers do,
exactly.
Or around the country do.
Oh, exactly. You have a short track late model race at Lee USA Speedway. Guess what? They have one set of tires.
Yeah.
And they got to run 50 laps on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that isn't the science like NASCAR has. It's like Hoosier or whoever, I think it's Hoosier. Brings the one tire.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter if it's hot, it's cold, it's snowing. It doesn't matter.
Yeah.
That's what you got.
Yeah.
You know, and Hoosier didn't come and run a tire test. They just said, oh, you're running a short track?
There you go.
Here you go. So here's the other side to this that I want to make sure we make a note of, and we have for the last couple weeks, is Bristol Motor Speedway's TV numbers were up again. They were up 10% compared to last year's spring Bristol dirt race, and up 11% over Atlanta, which would have been the same weekend a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So overall, the 2024 season remains up 11% over 2023, excluding the postponed Daytona 500 this year. I want to give a quick shout out to Seriously Fast Motorsports for those statistics. But yeah, I mean, it's so, again, not to, like, the only term that's coming to mind right now is NASCAR needs to let them cook, because I can't even say that. But anyway, my point is they ask what is working, what's going on right now is working.
Mm-hmm.
You're getting viewership, you're getting excitement. I mean, the fact that broadcast booth on Sunday for Fox, they were on the edge of their seat the whole time. You could hear that Mike Joy and Kevin Harvick and Clint Bowyer were like, we don't even know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and Harvick was like, I'm glad I'm not racing.
Well, yeah.
I'm glad I'm up here.
But my point is if you're the voices of your broadcast don't know what's going to happen, how do you think the fans at home are feeling?
Right, exactly.
The fans at home are going, oh my goodness, this is insane. This is going to be good, you know? And I felt the same level of on the edge of my seat-ness, I guess you could say, as you would at Daytona. Like, at any moment, a car could have went around. At any moment, a caution could have flown. At any moment, 35 of the 36 cars could have been trapped a lap down.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is huge. With that being said, though, we have to be aware of the fact that only 5 cars finished on the lead lap.
Yes.
So, if, let's say, we didn't have a caution in the middle of stage 1, or the middle of stage 2, how many cars would actually be on the lead lap?
2.
You know what I mean? Like, if we start stage 3 with 5 cars on the lead lap, how many cars are actually finishing on the lead lap? And
exactly.
I think that's where NASCAR then turns around and says, okay, we got to keep an eye on this, because you don't want the days of Bill Elliott when he goes out and laps the field 4 times.
Right.
So, I don't know. But we'll have to just wait and see what NASCAR does. Like I said, I think the race was a good race.
I thought so, too. One thing I'll say, too, is I was trying to find the tweet, but I can't find it now, is someone said they talked about the lead changes so far, and the obviously Bristol had the most lead changes in NASCAR short track history,
mm-hmm.
at 54, I think was the final number. And Atlanta was 44 lead changes. Daytona was in the 20s, I believe. And then it was Phoenix. And then, but everyone was like, what a start. Can you ask for a better start for NASCAR if you're in the Cup Series with all these lead changes and the finishes that you've had?
Right. Right. I mean, we didn't even bring that up. 54 lead changes, the most in short track history for NASCAR.
Yeah.
So tell me this isn't a good race.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I can understand where, from Goodyear, NASCAR's point of view,
like, that stunk.
They're looking at this going, oh my goodness. But at the same time, to the fan and consumer side of things, that makes me want to go to Bristol in September. Road trip? But anyway.
That'd be just a couple weeks after we do Daytona.
That's fine. Well, technically, it's 3 weeks, because they go to Darlington, Atlanta, Watkins Glen, and then Bristol. Not that I looked into this
Bristol,
at all.
Is Bristol around the 12?
Yeah. No, it's the cutoff of round of 16.
Daytona's the regular season finale.
No, it's not. Darlington is this year.
Oh.
I know. I'm sorry.
Oh, probably because
to you
probably
who's going to your
probably,
first Daytona race, I'm sorry. That's no longer the cutoff.
It's probably because of the
Olympic
break that threw me off.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah,
I think next year it'll go back to being the regular season finale, but we'll see on that. But anyways, looking ahead real quick before we wrap up, looking ahead to Cirque de Americas. What are your thoughts going into this weekend? Obviously, I haven't really thought about it much, but
I haven't either.
Anything you're seeing on social media about
the stage breaks are back.
Stage breaks are back.
I don't like that.
Yeah, me neither. I honestly don't like that because it takes your strategy out of it in a sense. But yeah. So truck race, Xfinity race on Saturday, Cup race on Sunday, racing at the Circuit of the Americas. Should be a good race. Always good entertaining.
Yeah, Dakota is usually is probably I think one of the best road courses on the that they do. Charlotte, I'm not a clown on the Charlotte Roval because that's a road course, but it's also half the actual oval. So, but over like a Sonoma, Watkins Glen, or Coda, I definitely love Coda's probably my favorite one.
And the weather this weekend looks good too. 70s.
I don't think Mother Nature knows it's NASCAR season.
It's supposed to rain and thunderstorm on Thursday.
Oh well, so that's what that is.
She's just coming, and on Monday, so we really have the window.
Yeah, we had the window.
Hit your marks, boys.
But besides the 500 and the clash, Mother Nature's like, oh, yeah, maybe you forgot it's NASCAR season. Or maybe she wanted us to have fun this year compared to last year. It was like I think it was like 24 races impacted by rain.
She's gearing up for, well, she realizes that NASCAR now offers the wet weather package for short track races. So she's like, well, no point. We'll focus our attention somewhere else.
Mother Nature made it so New England had to worry about weather, which New Hampshire usually has a perfect time. It's like, oh, there's no rain. Oh, what's the forecast? Oh, 80s? Or sorry, 95? Wow.
Yeah, exactly. It's either you're soaked or you're soaked in sweat. But anyways, Jordan, any final thoughts on Bristol or IMSA or anything looking ahead to Circuit of the Americas?
Not really, no. I mean, looking forward to watching the Xfinity Series again because obviously they had an off week. But Shane Van Gisbergen's racing in the Cup Series
on this weekend, yeah, and that's always a name to watch out for.
He's in the, I think he's in the 16. Yes, he is. He's in the 16 for Colic Racing because AJ Allmendinger, the road course legend, is driving the 13.
All right, two good names to keep an eye out for.
Shane Van Gisbergen actually has the third best odds right now to win, behind Tyler Reddick and Chase Elliott.
Okay. All right. I was going to go put some DraftKings money on him, but never mind.
Ricky, you can bet on the legend, Timmy Hill, is back.
Ooh,
too.
My long shot. I'm going to put a dollar on.
Plus 40,000.
Put a dollar?
His eyes are tied with Kaz Grahl and Ricky Stenhouse Jr.
Put a dollar on each of them. All right, well, folks, I want to say thank you all so much for tuning in to this week's edition of Racing Hotspot. Don't forget to follow us on social media as well as all of our social channels, website, available on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Like I said, follow us on Facebook and Instagram. And for Jordan Jenkins, my name is Devin Poslesny. We'll see you all next week after the Circuit of the Americas as well as other motorsports events in the world.